Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, episode number 14. Accessibility, which you can spell either as accessibility or accessibility. Depends on how much we talk.
And how good of a speller you are.
Today, I will be Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Tools team.
And I will be Alan Viverett from the UI Toolkit team.
I have always wondered how to pronounce your last name, and now I know. We had to actually have you on the podcast to figure that out.
It depends on where you're from. If you're from Georgia, like my father, it's Viverett.
All right. I was actually born there, so I think I'll try that out from now.
Please
on.
Don't.
So that's all we needed to know, so the podcast is over. Join us next time when we try to figure out someone else's name. So Alan has a background in accessibility. You worked on the accessibility team of Android for a couple years?
Yes, I was on the accessibility team for 2.5 years. Lead developer on TalkBack for a year and a half.
TalkBack is
the accessibility service that comes with Android devices. It's open source, which is pretty cool. It comes on anything that has Play Store, so it's not an AOSP. TalkBack provides spoken feedback, so if you can't see your device or you have trouble seeing your device, go into accessibility services, turn it on, and your phone will start talking at you.
So we're not talking about when you lose your phone, you can't see it in front of you.
You could send yourself a message, and your phone would say something along the lines of "new message," and then you could search it out. Yeah.
So is that useful for things like, you know, reading books or magazines while you're driving?
Yes.
Or is it? Really?
So one of the ways that we liked to look at developing the software was. This is for anybody who isn't able to look at their phone. So things like situational blindness. Say you are biking and you have a Bluetooth headset, or you're driving and you can't look at your phone. Those would be potential use cases. It's really targeted at somebody who can't see their phone at all and needs a lot of feedback. So it's going to read notifications. It's going to read any dialogues that pop up. It's going to read whatever's under your finger when you touch the screen.
And do you get to interact with it back by voice because you can't see to where to touch? So, like, if it's reading through some post and I want to hit next page or whatever, will it auto advance, or do I say more, or does it ask me what do I do next, or how does that work?
So, voice is a really cool interaction model for blind and low vision mobile phone use. Voice is not the most accurate thing in the world all of the time. And it's especially difficult if you're using voice interaction and you make a mistake, and if your primary mode is voice interaction, then you have to say, cancel, 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 no, 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 no! And then your phone, you know, does whatever. While it does, TalkBack will work with something like Google Now, which, let's see if this, okay, Google? Yeah. So if you say "Okay, Google," it'll come up. The phone will stop talking at you while the mic is on, and you can use something like Google Now. When it comes back with a result, it'll speak to you. But that's definitely not the primary interaction. You're going to be doing the same thing. You'll still be touching your phone. You'll still be tapping on things.
Okay.
So the primary interaction model, as I recall, is gesture-based stuff, right? So there's a special mode that you put your device into where particular finger actions will take you to that next action or take you to the default focused button click or whatever.
So there's an actual like gesture overlay that sits on top of everything and sort of, interesting.
Yeah, so the legacy of accessibility on Android is in the days of the G1 and Android 1.5, 1.6, we had devices that had physical keyboards and trackballs. And actually, at that point, using the touchscreen for accessibility was not a great experience. You had to really use the trackball to move around the screen. Anything that could get keyboard focus, you would hear spoken out loud, which meant there was a lot of stuff that you would never be able to discover in 1.5, 1.6. Ice Cream Sandwich, we added touch exploration. Explore by Touch is the name of the feature in accessibility. And this let you actually explore everything on screen. So this added a notion of accessibility focus. If you turn on accessibility, you get this yellow highlight. That's accessibility focus. It's separate from keyboard focus. It can go everywhere. So as you're touching the screen, you hear things out loud, you can double tap, and that's the current interaction model. We also have a large set of gestures. So if you're on a keyboard, if you're using a desktop with a keyboard and you have accessibility turned on, one of the really great things about a keyboard is you have a lot of hotkeys available. So anything that you need to do quickly, getting to a list of apps, copying something, selecting text, is all very easy with a keyboard. We wanted to make some things quickly accessible with just a couple of swipes. So if you do turn on accessibility on your phone, you can do a down and left gesture to go back, since some devices with like capacitive back buttons, impossible to find because it's not part of the touch screen. It doesn't give feedback when you touch it. A couple of other things, there's a local and global context menu. These are pretty recent. If you do a down right gesture, you get the, I believe, global context menu. Local, global. So local is whatever you have currently focused. So local actions would be things like text selection on the currently focused item.
Accessibility tutorial.
Aha! You found it!
Should turn my volume down while I'm playing.
That's great. Yeah, so let's see, what else?
I was going to ask where that tutorial is found, actually, because that's a good way to explore.
I just did
all this
it.
Stuff.
I went and turned on TalkBack, and then it automatically started the tutorial on the phone. So
So we will start up the tutorial automatically because once TalkBack is on, the interaction model is very different. And if you have no idea what's happening and you turn it on because you're curious, it can be a little difficult because it turns from.
I feel like I'm in VI the first time. How do you exit this thing? I don't know what to do. My terminal is broken.
We hear that a lot because one of the guys that works on accessibility bugs sits in the office right next door, and mm-hmm. we often hear that voice in our office talking at him. So there's two sides. Actually, there's sort of three important components of the stuff that you were working about on before in accessibility. One is TalkBack, the actual functionality of this. Another is the framework capabilities to mm-hmm. support it, so the ability to actually focus everywhere on the screen when you mm-hmm. need to. And I know that was severely enhanced in ICS as well as, mm-hmm. as Jelly Bean, mm-hmm. And we continue to work on that stuff. You also contribute to a lot of that stuff. And then there's also, particularly for the people that may or may not be listening to this podcast, there's the app developer side of it, mm-hmm. where they may need to do the right things to enable. So if I recall from when we were talking about this a couple of years ago, when a lot of this functionality came online, yeah, we do it for the standard components. That's mm-hmm. a lot of the framework. Stuff. So make sure that buttons do the right things and text views do the right things. But if there's a custom view, mm-hmm. we don't know automatically how to navigate that for TalkBack. So the app developers may need to provide us information about whether they want us to navigate the entire view hierarchy in that custom layout or whether there's information that should be propagated at the top level. I've talked enough.
That's exactly right. So if you use built-in widgets, you get a lot of stuff for free. TalkBack, to a certain extent, TalkBack understands class names. So if you're using a button, TalkBack knows it's a button. It'll speak certain things that are appropriate for buttons, same for list views, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of APIs that the data from which gets piped to TalkBack, and currently that happens through accessibility node info class. So this contains things like, for a list, the to and from indices of the items it's displaying on screen. There's a collection info and collection item info objects to encapsulate the data about rows and columns in lists. There's a set of accessibility actions and more recently custom actions that you can define to do things like dismiss items or click on items on the screen. And so if you're a developer and you're creating something that's completely custom, for example, a calendar view is a great example. Even if you're drawing everything directly to screen, you can still expose everything as though it were actual views. So you create what we generally refer to as a virtual view hierarchy. And because you're drawing everything on screen and you're probably handling touch events, you already know the coordinates of everything. You already know what the interaction model is. So it's a very small step to formalize all of that and expose it to TalkBack, and then you get full, seamless accessibility everywhere, which is pretty cool.
And then why would people want to do that?
Motivational pitch.
Yeah, no, the motivation. So there are a couple of reasons. One is because it's a good thing to do. You want to be inclusive of all of the users that you could potentially have. And sometimes developers will say, oh, well, I don't think anybody would be using my app with TalkBack. And chances are, if that's true, it's because your app has a really poor accessibility use case. If you never try, yeah, you'll never have those users.
So it's self-fulfilling. So they're right.
Yeah. If you don't want users, yeah.
I wonder if, do we have a way in the Play Store to surface apps that are, you know, accessibility friendly so that you can sort of search by? That might be useful. I mean, if you actually are, have some sort of, if you're blind or deaf or whatever, if there could be a way to actually search for apps that do the right thing.
It's a hard thing to do automatically because is the interaction model good? Is all of the data that the developer thinks should be exposed to the user actually exposed to the user?
Right. Yeah, it could be. If they're using all standard widgets and it's a fairly simple app, they may have a great TalkBack experience out of the box, right?
But there's no way for us to...
You'd have to qualify.
It's NP complete to know whether they have like an on-touch listener, and when you touch it, does it actually speak the data that it's supposed to?
Yeah, I guess it would more have to be done at the rating system, right? Yeah. Where someone who uses it with this discovers it's bad, you could sort of flag it as needing work.
But there are some really basic things, and like our lint tool looks at content descriptions. And if you if you're missing content descriptions, it's pretty obvious that you have at least that much to do. Right. You're not going to be fully accessible.
Yeah. So that's for people who actually need it to be able to hear or read or whatever. I read somewhere that this is also useful for like UI testing frameworks.
Yeah. So the UI Automator in Android uses the accessibility framework.
So that's so that it can drive through the UI and know what things are.
Yeah. So this is so that it can get data out of the UI and confirm that if you think you're supposed to be showing this text on screen, you're actually showing this text on screen. Confirm the position of items on screen, automate clicking on items, scrolling through lists. And the cool thing is that this can all run on device. You don't have to have ADB connected and be sending key events and touch events. And the great flip side is if your app is accessible, it will be testable as well.
That's good.
All right. So let me see. We'll fast forward a little bit. So you work on accessibility, sort of hardcore Android, get this stuff working for a couple of years. Yes?
It almost sounds like you're going to transition because I have more accessibility stuff.
I was. Oh, you know what? I'll build a suspense point. And then, but first.
Okay, so it sounds like TalkBack is sort of focusing on people who have vision impairment. I don't think a lot of our listeners are going to be, deaf. What kinds of support do we have for basically deaf users? Mm-hmm. So I would think like the captions, for example, like if you can't hear what's going on, do we have solutions for that? Or is that also included by TalkBack?
Are you saying that I didn't need to learn sign language in order to do the podcast, that I wasted my time with that particular skill for this?
You can stop translating. It's okay. Thank you, though.
All right.
So for deaf for users with hearing impairments, one of the most basic things is vibration alerts. So instead of having a ringtone, you will set your phone to vibration. Okay. And that's a great start. We also have video captions. So we support right now embedded web VTT captions. We support the CEA something standard. I implemented this.
I remember that. You were trying to use overlays to get captions to work in Jelly Bean, I think, right?
Yeah. So captions landed in, I believe, KitKat MR2.
Oh, okay.
They look great, by the way. They're fantastic. We've got a casual font setting. It's great. Very casual.
Not Comic Sans. You went with casual.
It's configurable, isn't it? I swear I've seen some settings where you can go and tweak the captions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's casual, there might be formal. It's got a little tuxedo on all of the fonts.
It would be nice if it could adapt, so sitcoms should be using Comic Sans. Can you explain what that means by the you mentioned some I guess, names for where these captions are coming from. Are those standards? Mm-hmm. So the video stream contains this?
Right now, the built-in support for video view, so if you're a random app developer and you're adding videos to your apps, Web VTT is a captioning format intended for display on the web. It covers I think it may be a superset of television captioning standards. Can't hold me to that. But it allows you to position things on screen, say what they're supposed to look like, and this gets you pretty much entirely the way there for anything that you'd want to do with displaying captions on screen. So if you're embedding video and you are able to generate web VTT captions, which is incredibly easy to do if you've uploaded it to YouTube, there's automated captioning, there's caption syncing. You can add captions to videos in your app, super easy. It's just calling a couple of methods to set it.
That's great. I use captions always. I mean, with Netflix, mm-hmm. Play Movies, all of it. I think when my kids were young, I got in the habit of, it's nice to not miss things just because they said something, you know, in your presence.
So the other thing that we added in KitKat, I guess MR2, is system-wide caption settings. So instead of, if you need captions or if you want captions, or if you need to set specific colors or a high contrast foreground background, you can do this in system settings instead of having to go into every single app and deal with a bunch of different interfaces for saying, yes, I need captions, I want them to look like this. Right. So now if you go into settings, accessibility, captions, it's all right there.
Cool. So then the app developer, would they query what that is set to for the system before they enable something in their app?
Yeah, so if you're using Video View and you're using Web VTT captions, it just happens by default and okay. The settings get piped in.
If you're doing your own custom
video. Yeah, if you're Netflix, for example, then you can query the captioning manager. You obtain this from context like any other manager class.
Okay.
Do we have any support to deal with color blindness?
Starting in L, we have an experimental feature for adjusting the color space using a method called Daltonization. So this shifts the color space so that if, for example, you have red-green color blindness, the way that it works is you simulate and then you perform a color transformation, and that color transformation takes the red and green space and collapses those into one color channel so that the brightness difference tells you whether something is on the red side or the green side. It's pretty cool. And the other cool thing is you can do this all with color matrices. So it's something that we can do everywhere on screen at once.
That's cool. So this can be used for color blindness. I was hoping that whatever solution we had would also be a great hack so that I could, you know, I just hate when it's like early in the morning and I turn on my device and it's bright, bright white, and I would like to have sort of, you know, one of the things I like in Play Reader is that I can have the black background with the white text, which is much easier on the eyes, and I was sort of hoping for some sort of like bright lightness.
Color inversion?
Yes.
So we actually also added as an experimental, and it's experimental because the implementation goes through hardware compositing and has a very, very almost infinitesimally small slowdown, depending on the device and how powerful the GPU is. But we have color inversion, we have Daltonization, color space adjustment, we have grayscale mode, which is actually, I really, really should mention. Grayscale mode is cool, one, because I think it looks cool. Two, because if you want to test your app for every type of color blindness, every cone deficiency that exists, you set it to grayscale. This is great for checking contrast because it does the perceptual brightness of every color. This is great to tell if you have a tone of red, a tone of green, a tone of blue or yellow that is equal. So if you expect to be able to tell the difference between this red dot and this green dot, and in monochrome you can't, then you need to adjust something.
So is this developer options, or how does one play with this?
Yeah, so these are monochrome mode is in developer options about three quarters of the way down in, might be called color space adjustment. But this is where you can simulate different types of color blindness. We support protoanomaly, deuteranomaly.
Yeah, you support, I'll let you pronounce it.
Monochromacy, deuteranomaly, protoanomaly, and tritanomaly. The first two of those are red-green color blindness. I believe the most common of which is deuteranomaly.
Are there no smaller words, or were we just trying
red-green color blindness? There are two types of red-green color blindness based on whether the red cones or the green cones are affected. But they are slightly different modes to adjust. So we, yeah.
This is really fun. Turned this on is really monochrome.
Fun. That's the color scheme of hipsters.
Yeah, I'm feeling so hip right now.
I was using that on my phone for a week just as the default mode.
I feel like they should win an Oscar. You know, this is sort of like the black and white retro movie.
Black and white is the new black.
Yeah.
We were thinking of adding sepia.
Oh, very nice. Are there any other sort of, I guess, modalities or anything else sort of in accessibility that you have support for?
We have support for, it doesn't come on the system, but we have support for Braille and switch access just through, because the accessibility APIs allow you to do this. So Braille, if you have a Bluetooth Braille display, you can get Braille back from the store. There are a couple of developers working on switch access right now.
What does that mean?
So switch access is down to single button access to a device. So if you are bound to a wheelchair and you have like a sip and puff interface, your lungs are the only way that you can interact with the phone, you can still get to everything. If you only have one bit of access, you would have, for example, the accessibility focus cursor moving, or some other color cursor, moving from every item on screen in a linear fashion. You hit one button to activate it. Likewise for a keyboard, typically you'll have each row get highlighted, and then you have your one bit of input, and you select a letter within that row. Mm. So it's certainly a slow way to access a phone, but it's awesome that if that's the only way that you can interact with a phone, you can still use an Android device.
Wow.
Right. So should I go back to my previously started sentence?
Yes.
I was going to say, beyond the accessibility work you did, so you did all this stuff where you were basically hacking Android framework code, so then the Android framework team stole you to work on core framework, not necessarily accessibility focused, although you still work on
Still working stuff. On user interfaces, yeah.
Yep. And accessibility bugs. So since then, so that was a couple of years ago, so we know you worked on video captions. As well as, so what are some of the other stuff that you've done in sort of core Android framework and UI toolkit land?
I'm neck deep in drawable. So anything with any drawable class, what else? Material theme and styling stuff, neck deep. I've touched a lot of the widget classes. I own ListView.
You do
now,
own ListView.
Which is just fantastic.
Lucky person.
Lucky me.
Yes. Okay, so themes and attributes. This is kind of a deep area that I occasionally touch my toe in and then realize I have no idea where my toe is. So can you describe, I guess, the ideal way that people should view or use themes and styles and attributes in their apps? Like, why would they use that? What are we doing to make that a system that people can depend on more, or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basic background on themes and styles. So themes are they define theme attributes. Theme attributes supply default values for view attributes. So if, for example, in your activity theme you set the Android layout width parameter, that would supply a default value for anything that is inflated within that theme. Themes live on context, so if you create a layout inflator from a context with a particular theme, views will be inflated against that theme, which means they will inherit default values from that theme. This happens recursively, so if you have several views nested, the innermost view, that leaf view, will still inherit from that whatever the top level theme is. Whereas styles supply default values for the view on which the style is applied. So if I have a button, the default button style is in material is theme.material or theme.widget.material, no, widget.material.button. And that supplies default attributes like the background, the min width and height, the text appearance. So if I define my own button style and I set a background on that, that will, one, override the existing style.
But only that element of the style or the entire thing? Then you need
it
to
will override
everything.
That elements of the style. Oh, I hope I'm saying that correctly.
No, I think that if you were to set the style attribute on a button, yeah, like you made a new style saying bold fonts, and you set the font style to bold, and you put that style on a button, it no longer looks like a button because you're that style, unless that style goes and inherits from some other style, you've now replaced everything.
Okay, so if it's just declared on its own with no parent style, then
you've replaced it for that button.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so when you're defining styles, typically you're going to extend from an existing style. So you would have style name whatever, parent equals Android colon style slash widget.material.button. And that will give you all of the default button attributes. And then you add whatever else you need into as an element of that tag.
And then you're just overriding that single element, if that's the right word to
use
there.
Yes.
Yeah. So one thing I liked when I did CSS was that I can say, hey, I want this thing to have these classes. You know, this is a bold something, this is an important something. And then elsewhere I could say, well, you know, if you're bold, I want you to use this. Mm-hmm. Do we have anything like that? Because the problem here is I only seem to have the style attribute, and that seems to set, now I need to know exactly the parent chain, and I can't mix and match these. I can't say you're this and that.
Yeah, we don't right now, and that is something I would love to fix soon. One of the things, and that sort of folds into one of the things that's a little difficult right now, even in material style, where we've tried very hard to make it easy to, for example, propagate your accent color, whatever your branding colors for your app are, propagate that everywhere. If you set a color accent in your theme, that just gets applied anywhere that the color accent attribute is referenced. So if you set your text color to be that. But there's no way to say, oh, well, if you're a button, I want you to be this other color, unless you actually go in and set a style on all of your buttons. So yeah, I think that's one thing that I would love to get implemented.
Cool.
So what else was new in like preview? So you did a fair amount of work for material design going up to the preview, especially in themes and attributes.
Right? Exciting, mundane, exciting change. Drawables can now be inflated with theme attributes, which is big. But as an app developer,
maybe you can spend a second explaining theme attributes, because that's the question mark.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between the at and the question mark.
Yeah, so this is...
including
Chet's raising his hand. Theme attributes, as I mentioned, a theme can define a set of attributes and these supply default values. If you are defining the value of an attribute, say on a view, you can specify the value as either you've got the at dimension resources, you've got at string resources. You can have a reference to one of these based on your theme. So right now in Android, in Material, we have a color primary attribute. So in your theme, if you define Android colon color primary or color accent, this sets the value in the theme. If you want to reference this later on, so let's say you have a button, you want the text color to be your accent color. You can have Android colon text color as an attribute on your view, and you can set the value to question mark Android colon atter slash color accent, and the theme system, the view inflation system and resource system will resolve this to the correct value of blue.
Not the one that we define, but the one that the app developer defined in their theme?
Whatever, based on the theme that's being applied.
Yeah.
If you're setting your app theme and you're getting an inflator from that context, so if you're just doing the default like set content view in an activity, you would get whatever color you set it to be.
So it's basically an indirection pointing to a style?
It is an indirection pointing to a resource or a style. It can point to any sort of Android resource, a string, a dimension, a style, a drawable.
You put a string in your theme? All right.
Yeah.
I guess it's...
Hard
to think of a good reason for that, but hey, it's flexible.
Yeah, so one of the ways that you can use this, if you're creating drawables and you want to make it really easy for you to change your mind about the color of a drawable, one of the other things that we added in Material is drawable tinting. One of the things that we take advantage of in the framework that combines drawable tinting and drawable theme attributes is dynamic tinting of things at runtime based on where they are in the UI. So if you look at any of the action bar icons, so the back button, for example, the back button is defined to have a tint of color control normal. This is if you look at the XML file for this drawable, we have Android colon tint equals question mark Android colon attr slash color control normal. This pulls in a color state list, which is on the light theme, it is like 80% black, and on the dark theme, it's like 80% white. And this this icon is going to look right based on whatever theme you have, no matter where you put it in your UI.
So you just drew like a monochromatic icon.
So
and
yeah,
you're just coloring it at runtime based on this theme attribute.
Yep. So we have one single asset that is 100% opacity, white or black, doesn't really matter. And because we're tinting it dynamically at runtime, if we decide that we want 90% opacity purple, then we set that on our theme as the color control normal attribute. You can apply a theme to a portion of your UI by setting Android colon theme attribute on a view. And then anytime that that drawable gets inflated under that context, it will be purple or whatever.
You can set a theme on a view now? That's a,
yes.
Another Android
app. Yeah, so you've actually always been able, technically always been able to set themes on views using context wrapper. Or context theme wrapper, sorry. So context theme wrapper, because theme lives on context, just alters the theme of a context, so that if you then obtain an inflator from that context, or you call obtain styled attributes, or starting in L if you call get drawable, it will be inflated with whatever the context theme is, whatever theme you've set for your context theme wrapper. So the way that the theme attribute on view works is, as the inflator is running through your views, if it catches one of these, it wraps the context and then continues recursively inflating elements using that new theme.
So what's a typical developer use case for this? It's like the action bar, or?
Yeah, so we, in the framework, we use this for the dark action bar now. Previously, the dark action bar had a whole set of attributes that had to be redefined. So you had to switch up all of your icons to point to different assets. You had to switch up all of your text colors, all of your background colors. Kind of messy, kind of painful. Now, instead of doing all of that, we just set the theme, and all of the icons automatically inherit the correct colors. All of the text colors get modified correctly. This gets a little tricky for things like having a dark action bar with light-colored pop-up menus, because you have to then have another theme that you apply on top of your dark overlay. I'll take a step back right after this and explain overlay themes. Another theme that you apply on top of the action bar theme to then restyle the menus as light. And the way that we do that is with a theme overlay. And this is something that I think developers are going to start using more in Material. This has always existed, but was never really used. So a theme overlay is a theme that doesn't have a parent and doesn't define a whole bunch of attributes. One of the kind of interesting nuances of theme is that if you have like nested themes, so you have your activity theme, actually, you have a default theme. Your activity theme gets applied on top of this default theme. The default theme is picked based on your API target. So Material, you get theme.deviceDefault. Your activity theme is applied on top of that. So if you're not inheriting from something for your activity theme, you still get a bunch of defaults. And if you only defined one attribute, even if you didn't have a parent, you would still get all of the defaults. Styles don't work like this. So as you mentioned, if you set a button style and you don't set a parent, then all of the styles get blown away. But for themes, because we apply them on top of each other, you get this sort of stacked result. So if you want to only change, say, the button color, you can set a theme on a button that only defines color control normal or color accent, and that will only modify that one attribute and retain everything else from whatever its parent was. So if you if you have a theme overlay, you don't define a parent, you only define one attribute, you don't have to worry about what context you're being inflated in. You only need that just that one thing to change.
So I wanted to step back to one of the points we were making about drawables was the ability to now you inflate your drawables, you apply this theme color. We have default theme colors, but one of the ideas behind that aspect of material design was the ability to reuse the same assets and apply colors and particularly branding dynamically instead. So you don't have to generate all these PNGs with the baked in colors.
Yeah, we've gone from, I think, 6 times 5 DPI buckets for a button to a single XML file defining the shape of a button. And it's a shape XML, it's not a PNG anymore even. And then another single XML file to wrap that with a ripple and add some padding insets. So we've, button has gone from 30 assets, PNG assets, to essentially a single asset that gets dynamically colored.
So it seems like it's massively more elegant and expressive, but it seems like it'd be very expensive. I guess there's been a lot of framework improvements in ELTA that makes this possible, that you can do all this dynamic painting and tinting and nesting.
Well,
and
it's not like we're going to a lot of effort whenever we do one of these things. Like the shape that he's talking about, it's not a Mobius strip, right? It's a shape that's a rectangle. We know how to draw rectangles pretty efficiently. We apply color and we've applied the color.
Right? So the color is applied when we render. So it's not like we have to take this image, adjust every pixel, and then cache that somewhere. We just say, When the hardware renderer is drawing this to the screen, alter every pixel a little bit.
Okay, and so these things can be composed though, right? You can have one tint and another tint, and so it just basically multiplies it all together. And
So tint right now lives at a very low level in drawable. So if you actually have like nested drawables, you have a drawable or a layer list or a drawable container. If you set a tint on that layer list, it's actually going to dive into each drawable and call set tint. So they don't compose, it will replace.
Okay.
But it's not like you're drawing those 11 drawables. It's not like the pixel is being redrawn with a specialized tint.
It was more that I imagine that before, you have an icon and you just take that bitmap and you send it to the graphics driver and that's just blit. Whereas I think if we're doing all icons based on shapes now, that seems like it's more CPU, unless that also can like be offloaded to OpenGL.
These shapes are very simple shapes, and really a color fill is going to be about as cheap as a bitmap copy in GPU terminology.
So when we draw a rounded rect, we have vertices. We tessellate a representation of a rounded rect, and then we have a shader that colors that correctly with all of the tint. The same way if you're drawing a bitmap, we have a shader that draws the bitmap and tints it correctly. Yeah. So yeah, it's not really any more expensive to do tinting.
Cool. Yeah, no, L seems really fast. It just sounds massively complicated.
It should be cheaper in terms of resources because then we're not taking up space for bitmaps.
Almost. Not having XXX HDPI assets for everything in memory all the time is nice. And it should simplify things a little bit for developers too.
We're probably reaching the end of the podcast. I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to talk about, either in L preview or framework in general, or
let's see. What else has been going on? Material
nothing.
Theme,
just
drawables.
Here's a question for you. So since you talked about themes and attributes and styles, how does any of this and the stuff that we're doing in L? How does any of this apply to supportlet? Because obviously most developers are going to care about how they can use this stuff backward compatibly.
Yeah, so if you want to have material styling pre-L, we have app compat, yay.
Yay.
Which is, so much has been going into app compat. It's really, really shaping up well. So you won't get dynamic shadows, but all of the icons, all of the like the new Switch style can go into AppCompat. You may not get some of the same animations. You may not get the same efficiency for something like a reveal animation, a circular reveal. But most of the styling you will get for free by using AppCompat.
I was going to say, on the tools theme, we're thinking of, in the Gradle build system, letting you define, you know, the new L accent colors and having those basically spit out, you know, some compatibility theme stuff when you're building. So your sources will just, you know, you don't have to inline all these things. It'll just sort of happen at build time. We're not there yet, but that's our plan.
It would be nice if we could actually do more on the tooling side. I'm just always afraid to ask because you guys just need to finish your...
Yes.
Actual 1.0 product.
Yes, we are aware of that.
If you could just hurry up with that, then we could get back to asking you for things.
Yeah.
So one of the other things that we're working on the tools side, or that I have an intern working on the tools side, is getting making it easier to debug when you have theme and style issues. So because we're relying so heavily on which theme you're inflating a resource against, and that can get kind of confusing if you're composing a lot of different layouts together. We're adding a little bit of tooling in Hierarchy Viewer to figure out, well, where did this red color come from? Why is my text this color? Why is my button not the color that I expect? So we're hoping to make that a little bit easier, make it easier to understand how themes work and how styles work just by inspecting what's going on live.
Cool. Hierarchy Viewer, and that's going into your branch, right? The tools branch. So is that?
Yeah, that's the inspection open? Stuff is landing in AOSP tools.
Cool. Awesome. Let's wrap up. If you want to just close out with the smartest thing you've ever said.
Or the best joke you've ever heard.
There you go. Your pick.
You know, there's one that I've wanted to post on G+. and
that
tag
is not
you
a place
in,
for humor.
Let me see if I can remember it. It's hard being put on the spot.
Which was what I was going for.
Oh, right. So, you know, sometimes I think people misunderstand your puns and maybe think that you're being sarcastic. And so people say that Chet, he's an unsavory fellow. But really, I think you're a sweet guy and they're just bitter.
Okay.
Hashtag food puns.
All right, excellent place to leave it at. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.